What does a good salesperson look like? You may be picturing a confident, borderline, pushy extrovert, but you'd be wrong. According to Colin Goggins and Garrett Brown, the people who are best at promoting products, ideas, or themselves are distinguished more by their mindset than by their social skills. And they help you access that mindset in their new book, The Unsold Mindset, Redefining What It Means to Sell. Colin and Garrett teach at USC's Marshall School of Business and are co-founders of Agency 18. Here they are to share five of their big ideas.
Hey, this is Colin Goggins.
And this is Garrett Brown.
And we are the authors of The Unsold Mindset.
We are also professors of sales mindset for entrepreneurs at USC, the class that we created and now teach together. Before that, we were longtime sales leaders. We actually met at a company that we helped build from scratch to get acquired by Google. And yes, we are best friends in real life. Now, if you've heard of BookBite before, you know that we're going to spend the next 10 to 15 minutes talking about five key insights from our book. If you haven't heard a BookBite before, well, now you know that that's what we're going to do. So are you ready to go, Colin?
Let's do it.
All right. Insight number one, the best salespeople on the planet are the opposite of who you think they are.
In the book, we explore why the greatest salespeople on the planet aren't the best at overcoming objections. They're not the most extroverted. They're not the most social or the most self-confident. But they are, for instance, the most socially aware. They know that when they're talking to someone, that person does not think that they are listening. They think that they're waiting to speak, and they're able to course correct real time. They know that when they've said something, it didn't land, and they're able to change real time. They're not optimistic because they're naive. They're optimistic because they know what it feels like to talk to someone when you don't need anything from them. And that's a totally different conversation. And what's represented in this book is also really well represented in our classroom. A third of our class shows up every single week because they want to learn how to sell themselves. They want to build relationships. They want to become leaders. A third of the class shows up every single week because they want to learn how to sell ideas. They also want to become leaders. And then a third of the class shows up every single week because they want to learn how to sell products and services. And regardless of what reason they show up to class for, every week we know for sure one thing is certain. They're going to leave realizing that every single person, every single day, is selling something.
And we started our journey to figuring out what the core tenets of the unsold mindset are by asking a couple of key questions to probably at this point thousands of people. We ask it in front of every audience. We ask it in front of our classroom. We ask it to salespeople and non-salespeople that we interact with every day. And the first question that we ask is, what do you think of when you hear the word salesperson? And as you might imagine, the answers that we get are usually pretty colorful. It's everything from sleazy and slimy and pushy and manipulative to maybe, if they're feeling nice, extroverted or hardworking. There's always a subtext though. We do not like salespeople.
But what's interesting is the answer to the second question. The second question that we ask is, who is the greatest salesperson you know? Now, this person doesn't have to be alive. You don't have to know them personally. They can be a celebrity. But when we ask you, who's the greatest salesperson on the planet, who do you think of? Now, what's most interesting about the answers that we received is the overwhelming top two answers that we always get are Martin Luther King Jr. and Steve Jobs. Think about that for a second. That is where the book lives, in this incongruence between asking someone what they think of when they hear the word salesperson and they say yucky, and then asking someone who the greatest salesperson is that they know and they say Martin Luther King Jr. And that is the journey in the book. In the book, you'll see that we went out and we interviewed these great sales professionals and we asked them why they were good. But then we asked them, who's the greatest salesperson you know? And every single one of them were introducing us to people that weren't sales professionals.
And that's the reason we call our book The Unsold Mindset, because all of these people that we were interviewing, whether they were salespeople or whether they were military generals or chefs or lawyers or doctors or parents, they all sounded exactly the same. And they were saying and thinking the same things, even though they didn't know it. And so we realized that they were unsold on who they were supposed to be. They were unsold on who the people around them expect them to be. They were unsold on the way they were supposed to do things. And so that really takes us to our second insight, which is that these people gave themselves permission to be incredibly authentic and vulnerable.
And not just authentic in the buzzword sense, but hyper-authentic. These people were creating an infrastructure so that they could mitigate inauthenticity. And we call it in the book, an example of this is intentional ignorance. We were talking to people that would just come out and tell us what they are good at and what they love doing are not always the same thing. In order for them to show up passionately, authentically every single time, they would intentionally ignore parts of their work that would have them show up otherwise. We saw it everywhere. We talked to a number one salesperson in the book who refused to look at the firmographic data information where his leads come from. And they call this salesperson a person that sells the unsellable. And we asked them, why do you think that is? And in the book, you'll see this exploration of this person understanding and being self-aware enough to know that he will treat people differently based on knowing where they come from, because then he'll know the propensity to buy. And we saw it everywhere.
Yeah, it wasn't just salespeople. It was also, we spoke with General Stanley McChrystal. He led the joint forces, dozens of countries, tens of thousands of soldiers, and he said that normally people expect a general to walk into a room and puff out their chest and bark orders and have all the answers and know everything about a mission. And he told us he never did that. He said that he knew what he was good at and he knew where his attention was going to be the most valuable. And for him, he was more excited about empowering the people around him to do what they were best at. So instead of having the answers about all the technology or every detail, he knew where to find those answers by finding the people whose passion was the things that he didn't necessarily know a lot about.
Such a great point. We talked to a woman who was an advertising executive who really did not enjoy technology. And every time people would ask her about the technology, she would simply and honestly say, I don't know. But then she would go out and find the answers. And she told us that that was the inflection point in her career when she realized that people didn't just want her to have the answers, they were valuing her as being resourceful, and sometimes valuing being resourceful over having the answers. Now, it's not just authenticity that we saw, it's vulnerability. We were talking to people and they would be so vulnerable with us that they would talk to themselves out loud in front of us. It was the weirdest thing ever. And in the book, you'll see, we started seeing it everywhere. We talked to a sales executive who started the conversation with us saying, hey, my name is Jason, and then he would stop and he looked up at the ceiling and said, why do I keep doing that? And he looked back at us and he reintroduced himself. And Garrett and I couldn't understand why we liked this guy so much. So we reviewed the tape, and it was those 3 seconds of micro moment of connection. Those 3 seconds where we knew we were talking to one of the greatest sellers in the city, but not for those 3 seconds. We felt like for those 3 seconds, there's no way we were being sold. And then we started seeing everyone talk to themselves out loud.
Yeah, a few days later, we were talking to one of the top trial lawyers in California. And he told us a very similar story about how he was sitting there in front of a judge and jury. And by the way, think about a tough sale. His customer, the jury, is sitting there, but also his competition in the form of the other lawyer is sitting right next to him, poking holes in his sale. So he's sitting there and he's making some kind of argument, and the judge asked him to repeat himself. And he stopped and he looked up at the ceiling, and then he looked back at the judge and while he was looking at the ceiling, he said, what did I just say? Then he looked back at the judge and he said, Your Honor, I have no idea what I just said. And then the judge laughed and the jury laughed. And for that moment, he was not somebody who was trying to pull one over on them. He was a human who was just as nervous as they were sitting there. And these people weren't doing this intentionally as a tactic. They weren't trying to weaponize something so that they could make a sale. In fact, they didn't even know they were doing it. They had given themselves permission to be so authentic and so vulnerable that they were comfortable having those conversations out loud in front of other people. And we call this showing your work. Remember in high school math class when you wouldn't get credit just for giving the teacher the answer, but you actually had to show the steps that you used in order to get to that answer? That's what these great salespeople are doing in any form. Whether it's not knowing the answer to a question or whether it's something that they're nervous about, they're showing their work. They're letting the people that they're talking to in on their thought process, and they're getting rewarded for it.
And in the book, we really dig into that permission. Like, why are these people giving themselves permission to show this side of themselves? And we saw it really smack dab in the middle of lockdown during COVID, a really great example that's in the book. And there's these two groups, and one are underperforming during COVID, and this other group is actually doing really well during COVID. What's interesting about these two groups is that they flip-flopped. So before COVID, this one group, they were the underperformers. numbers, but they started thriving during lockdown. We wanted to know why, especially because the other group, they were historically always leaders and they were doing really poorly during COVID. And what we saw was the group that was doing well, they were giving themselves permission to be vulnerable and authentic and show a side of themselves because they assumed they were living through a shared experience with the person on the other end of the call. And all of their conversations sounded the same. They'd start by saying, hey, I don't even know if we should be having a call right now. This is really interesting and honestly very scary. And that is my 2-year-old behind me. And almost every single time, the love would be reciprocated or the vulnerability would be reciprocated. And the people would go, I'm so happy you said that. This is so weird. It's my first pandemic too. And it was everywhere.
And so it's not just us sitting here and telling you, oh, act authentic or be authentic. What we're saying is that all of these people gave themselves permission by building an infrastructure around them to allow themselves to be the most authentic person in the room at any given time. And our book is full of ways to do that. So that takes us to insight number 3, which is kind of how sellers view themselves. A great seller doesn't view their job as trying to convince you or persuade you to do something. We talk to these great salespeople with and without sales in their title, and they would say things like, oh, I'm a teacher, or oh, I'm a problem solver. They reframed what they were doing because it was always about the other person.
That's a great point. They weren't just adding value. They were valuable. They were making everyone around them better. And they weren't just doing it in these grandiose ways. It was as simple as asking a question you actually wanted to know the answer to. One major theme throughout the book is agency and how creating a sense of agency in the people that you are talking to, the people that you are selling, is paramount to a successful relationship. You see, the thing is people will say no to you because you're right. And so we saw all of these great sellers in the book do one thing exceptionally better than most people, which is they would ask questions that people had never heard of before. And they weren't asking leading questions. They didn't know the answers either, but they were asking questions that no one else wanted to know because they cared differently. And we would watch it unfold as you'll see in the book. Someone will ask a question and they will sit there in real time for the first time and ideate on that question because they had never heard it before. And whatever the answer was, they took ownership in it. They didn't feel like they were being sold. They were buying because it was their answer because they had the agency, meaning they felt like they were part of the process and part of the decision making.
We call those impactful questions. And they're basically a question that forces the person answering it to ideate in real time for the first time about something they never thought of before. Our fourth insight is about purpose. Now, we started talking to all of these great sellers about their goals. We wanted to understand how they set their goals and why they set their goals. But every time we began one of those conversations, the conversation always turned towards purpose.
Yes, we would sit and we would ask people all the time, tell us about your goal orientation, tell us about your goal process, and they would figure out a way to shoehorn the word purpose in. But we were never asking them about purpose. And then we saw that it was a scaled response. And we would sit in front of a lot of people and keynote speeches all the time. And we'd say, hey, put your hand up if you have goals. And everyone would raise their hand. And then we'd say, only leave your hands up if in addition to having goals, you also have your purpose articulated. And almost everyone always puts their hand down. But these great sellers that we were talking to throughout the book all had one thing in common, and that was that they viewed their purpose as the finish line and they viewed their goals as mile markers.
So the book takes people through a process for creating their own purpose. And the only reason that I'm cutting to the chase and my partner Colin is looking at me funny is because we only have about a minute left and we want to make sure that we get to the fifth point, which is that great sellers condition themselves to look for the good.
That's such an important point. The brain is so malleable. It will look for anything and it will find anything. And so for these great sellers to be able to curate an experience in their own heads where they knew how to look for the good and find it was a key separation between them and everyone else. They celebrated failures and they celebrated successes differently because of it. They were looking for obstacles. They understood that in order to have a breakthrough, they actually had to break through something. And so all of that created a really textured experience for them. And they talk about it as if wherever they are, they're in the best part of the movie. And they refuse to waste the best part of the movie being someone that they're not.
What a great place to end. There's so much stuff that we're passionate about talking about, and getting this in 15 minutes was tough. But we hope you enjoyed the insights that we shared here today. And we look forward to hearing what you think about the unsold mindset. Thanks, everybody.
Celebrate the process. Bye.
Thank you, Colin and Garrett. That was Colin Goggins and Garrett Brown with 5 big ideas from The Unsold Mindset, redefining what it means to sell. You might also want to check out our book bite for What to Ask, How to Learn What Customers Need But Don't Tell You by Andrea Belk Olson. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.